Well, it was announced today that Allison Cuddy will be taking over as artistic director at the Chicago Humanities Festival. Woo! The festival is a year-round program that features great authors and artists and symposiums on stage all around Chicago. Allison was serving as a program director, a role she's been in since 2014. It's a big move for Cuddy, but a natural one. She spent her early years producing and hosting arts programming at public radio, and she's respected citywide for her arts and culture acumen. So what can we expect from the artistic director of one of the biggest arts programs in the city? We'll find out tonight. Allison Cuddy, welcome to The Download. Congratulations.
Thank you, Justin. It's great to be here.
Great to see you, too. We worked together for a long time. And this is a great move for you. But what does it mean to move from a job like program director to artistic director? What does that mean for the commoners that don't understand titles?
The commoners. Well, I mean, it means that I set the creative vision of the organization. So, I mean, obviously there's a lot of people that work there and we do it together, but I'm charged with that and with some other things as well. So there's no hiding now. There's no getting away. If it doesn't go well, I can't slink away and blame it on someone else.
Right,
it's on me.
Just like what Tony Preckwinkle said, you got to be a leader.
Yep.
You got to step up. All right. So
the gotta lead the leaders.
The Chicago Humanities Festival is something that we've had a lot of guests on the program and we've promoted a lot of things that have gone. But tell
Thank
us about
you.
The festival, where just what it does for the city and what you guys are trying to accomplish.
Right. Well, we've been around a long time. This will be our 28th festival this fall. And that was how we started with the fall festival, bringing a lot of people together at one time of the year, usually organized around some theme that we think is of like broad importance, but using the humanities to try and talk about stuff going on in the world. And I think that right now we are in a super polarized environment, and people are more interested in their differences in a negative way. I mean, like, difference is great, but you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. pointing out the ways they're not like each other.
Right.
And there's a lot of fighting, and there's a lot of, like, back and forth, especially via social media. And some of that's exciting. And, you know, who doesn't like to get into a good, like, you know, comment war every once in a while?
Social media spat, sure.
Yeah. Have I ever done that? Or what is the question?
Yeah, never have I ever.
Never have I ever gotten into a comments war. I have not.
You haven't?
I feel like I'm missing out. Yeah.
So exhilarating and so depressing at the same time.
Yeah. It's that the highs and lows. So we try to like find the nice balance. We try to like create a space where people can actually talk to each other, even if they don't agree with each other. They can like tackle really complicated topics or really charged ones. Like, we're doing a summit in July. We don't normally program in July, but we're doing this whole big summit on free speech and privilege and thinking about, you know, speech is this really charged issue right now. And it has to do with the way we're talking to each other online. And so I guess we like to think that we encourage civil discourse, and it's important. We have to talk to each other. We can't run the country if we don't talk to each other.
We can't retreat to the corners, like you even you kind of joked about at the beginning.
Yeah.
But we can. I mean, this is a time where we talked about it earlier in the show. There's a study that nearly half of liberal or people who consider themselves liberal won't even be in the same room with a Trump supporter. I mean, we're getting to a point where we're siloing off and we're okay with it. And that's where civil discourse comes in.
Right. And I mean, some of that is just like the false, I'm not gonna call it false news, but false representation, because people love the division. They love the headlines, you know, like all the news is meta now. It's like the headlines have nothing to do with the story. You're always like finding out about the story from the jokes people are making, not having actually read it, but like the snarky response. And like this fall, we're doing, our whole festival is on belief. Belief in the sense of like religious and spiritual experience and, you know, do you have a belief in a higher power kind of thing, but belief also in the sense of trust in institutions. So the government, the media, science. And, you know, actually people are coming together across those religious differences more than they ever have before. So some of that has to do with people aren't as involved in organized religion, but people are marrying across religious lines. So actually I think that people are connecting to each other in lots of ways, but you wouldn't know
it. We're just hearing the stories of polarization because that's popular.
That's popular. Just people like that more. It makes us like, you know, clutch our pearls or wring our hands or whatever.
Do you at the Humanities Festival, when you're programming a festival that surrounds civil discourse in a time where there is this polarization, do you have to go out of your way to make sure it's balanced, to have a conversation that is going to represent different points of view?
Yeah, well, we don't. Our slogan is not fair and balanced. So, what does that mean? It means whatever your political position, it's not going to disqualify you from being in the festival. But on the other hand, I don't think we have to approach it that way. We try to instead. So, for the theme of belief, we try to approach it, make it as diverse and broad a topic as possible. So, bring lots of different, like, what are the varieties of religious experience, and dive in from as many perspectives, like. For the humanities, sure, you think like art, music, poetry, but we do science and tech and business and, you know, so we bring all of that in as well. So you can think about like belief in relationship to how economic markets work. Like, what do we think? What do we believe about the markets, but how do they actually work and what drives that? So I think that's where our kind of balance comes in, like just trying to be as broad and diverse in our approach as possible.
What I've always liked about the festival is that you will more often than not present the material in interview style or more conversational style as opposed to an old symposium where someone gets behind a lectern and talks for an hour. Why is that? What do you get out of the idea of having an interview on stage where people can kind of watch that interviewing happen?
Well, right. It's like your show in a way, right? That you get to see people thinking together, that so that it's not just someone relaying the work they've done. And we do that. People come and give lectures, but they're shorter. They don't go for a whole hour. But, you know, so you see people like ideas in motion and being contested and challenged and like, well, what about this and all of that? So I think that like it makes it more like a kind of spectator sport, or you feel like you're a part of that conversation. And then we almost always have Q&A. And so people get to engage. But there's lots of different ways we could be engaging people. And that's what I want to think about. I mean, we're thinking about, you know, not everyone can come to a program, but they're interested in the ideas. And so what are other ways that they can engage with what we're doing? Because definitely there are people who love what we do, but don't always get to come out to the live event.
We're talking discourse, engagement, humanities with Allison Cuddy, the new, brand new artistic director of the Chicago Humanities Festival, just announced today. Allison in studio tonight. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk more here on The Download. Stay with us. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, Allison Cuddy, the artistic director. Got a nice ring to it. Chicago Humanities Festival in studio just announced today. She'll be taking over the reins there. All right. So I'm fascinated because I've always known the Chicago Humanities Festival, and I know that it was a fall experience that would be a week long or two, maybe a month, maybe 2 weeks. I forgot what it was. But the idea that it was once a year and you built up to it. And over the last, seems like recent memory, the festival has turned into a year-round occasion. I'll get something that says, "Hey, this weekend there's going to be some, you know, a symposium on this or that." I mean, talk about that change. Talk about the idea of taking it from one set thing that happens in the fall and doing year-round programming.
Right. It was a big change. It's been a big change, and we kind of did it on a pretty tight timeline. So, it was suddenly like, "Yeah, there we are. We're there all year round." And I think the idea was, you know. Partly it was just that there's so many more opportunities and not everyone is available in late October through
like
November.
The guests and things like that.
Yeah, the people that we bring. And so there were people we really were excited to do programs with and we thought would be great. Our audience would really love them and we couldn't. So part of it was that let's start trying to do stuff. And we did like a couple one-off programs here and there in the spring. And then we decided to really like go whole hog and try and recreate the festival experience that everybody knew in the fall and do something like that in the spring.
Right.
So we've done two spring festivals now, and then we'll still do like the one-off, like kind of opportunistic programs here and there. But it was a big shift. It was a big shift because, you know, we were building up to one thing and now we're building up to one thing and we're working ahead to do another thing. And so
Do you have to expand the staff to do that? Do you have to think creatively in different ways? I mean, how do you go from only booking and producing a 2-week festival to year-round programming?
I mean, we have really strong programmers. We have a great Rena Rinaldi is our program director, and she's just completely plugged into the whole publishing world, and so has a really strong sense of what's coming out and what's going to be great, what people will connect with. And so, you know, having people like that who are just have that kind of really broad understanding of what we could be doing, that helps a lot. You know, the staff is, I think, about the same. We've added some more people.
So you just have to think about it differently. It's almost like a paradigm shift to say, okay, we're building up to this time. That's how we used to do it.
Right.
And now we have to think differently as a, and that's, I guess that's the role of management.
Well, and I mean, you know what it's like. You're always, the job, doing this kind of work, you're always thinking about programs. What could we be doing? Who could you present? And so in some ways, it also was an opportunity to be more creative in a way that feels natural, like not to have to hold off until this particular part of the year, but really do the things that are meaningful. And you know, I think like this past spring we did a small festival on the theme of stuff, and it was mostly about like, why do we have so much stuff, like, and all our weird and complicated relationships to it. But it was a great time to do stuff on, you know, we were talking about like environmental issues, and there's just stuff in the news going on, you know, and like the haves and have nots, and people were really thinking about like the kind of widening gap between us, between the poor and the rich. And so it was a perfect opportunity to have that conversation, and why wait to have that like 6 months later?
It's amazing to me, because I guess the question I was having is, what is the appetite like for a Chicagoan to come to an event like this? You know, we talked about discourse and we talked about engagement, but I mean, at a certain point, they're used to experiencing that in festival style, where it's like a festival of discourse, right? We're gonna, this is a great week for me.
Right.
Do you have to change the appetite, the habits, the way that people sort of interact with the Chicago Humanities Festival when you expand to a year-round program?
I mean, in some ways, yeah. In other ways, it just means that more people get to interact with us who might not have known about us, right? I mean, there's a lot going on in the fall, and so to be able to be present, and not just at different times of the year, but in different parts of the city, because, you know, we're an itinerant organization. We don't have our own venue, so we rely on the kindness of others. You know, we have partnerships with the Art Institute, the Museum of Contemporary Art, the DeSable Museum, and so thinking about where we are in the city, too. So I don't know if we have to, I mean, I guess to some extent, for people who've been with the festival a long time, to sort of think about, well, now I can go at other times of the year, but yeah, I think it's a benefit, right? And then for other people, it's a way for them to discover us and actually have the experience that they weren't able to have before.
We're talking humanities on the show. Allison Cuddy here. It is interesting, because this, I feel like you've seen a tremendous explosion of humanities and festivals around. I think of Chicago Ideas Week.
Yeah.
I think that the city does more and more. It seems like every, even the for-profit, I think of the for-profit sector and Deloitte and others that do like business symposiums.
Oh,
it seems
yeah.
like the idea of a festival symposium or just this idea of discourse is one that is catching on all over the place. I mean, it's like wildfire in the way that it's like this, and authors are coming in and people are coming in. Do you feel that? Do you feel like there's some sort of change in the way that what people want?
It feels great. I mean, it feels like people really want to get together in a room and experience something, and like feel, even if they're not talking to each other. But I think that does happen. People come for the ideas and like, you know, the education in a way, but they come to be entertained and they come to like hang out with each other. Yeah. They want to be with other people who are like them, who are interested in like hearing about this. And that's, you know, a lot of people, but it does feel like that. I mean, there's so many different live events going on, and I do wonder, like, is it again what we were talking about earlier, that actually people do want to be with each other, do want to connect, and this is a way for them to do that in
outside
a way
of
that,
social media, right?
Yeah, and then also it's like the media. I mean, right, the whole long form is back again. Look at your show. I mean, you have this long expanse of time to talk about issues, and people settle in, and I think people are looking for that again. They're bored with sound bites. They want to understand more. They're not necessarily going to get it from the usual media outlets. I mean, so they're looking for that kind of substance. So whether they're turning to online platforms that offer them like really long stories, or, you know, longer programs like this, or our programs, you know, so they get to sit with like one or two people for an hour and really hear them think.
I always think about, you know, arts and culture, and at some point, and if you could stick around past the news, we can talk more about this. But I am always amazed at the fact that this city continues to strive and thrive as a bastion for arts and culture. That it's not something that goes away, even if government funding gets cut, or even if the ticket prices and rents go high. There's a way that the city comes together and tries to continue the long legacy of arts and culture. Do you feel like you're part of that? Do you feel like with the Humanities Festival that you get this opportunity to express yourself and sort of plug into that, I guess, current?
Yeah. I mean, the festival, we bring a lot of people to Chicago, but the festival is also a platform for so many people here who are doing really interesting things. We had this great artist in a couple years ago, Aram Han Cifuentes, who her whole artistic practice is stitching. And she just became a citizen, but she wasn't at the time, and she was stitching this huge sampler, every question on the U.S. citizenship test and every answer.
I remember this.
Yeah, and I mean, that's someone like, I mean, now she's getting all kinds of attention. She's been doing these banners and stuff, but it's really great to showcase that kind of stuff. And like, here's this artist that's like deeply engaged with this really big complicated issue, citizenship, you know, and we can have like, and people came and they stitched with her and talked with her, and is amazing. So yeah, in multiple ways it feels like we're plugged into what's happening here.
The Chicago Humanities Festival, I believe, is a festival that helps Chicago kind of get out of its own way in the way that you know, we always seem to have this second city complex. And the arts and culture scene here does as well. I mean, there's always sort of comparisons to whether it be theater, whether it be arts, whether it be disc, whatever, you know, even humanities. And events like yours that are happening year round help give Chicago its own identity, one that doesn't that is non-comparable. Allison Cuddy, artistic director of Chicago Humanities Festival, in studio with me tonight. Let's take a break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about arts and culture here in Chicago. Stay with us. Thanks, David. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight, Allison Cuddy. She is the artistic director at Chicago Humanities Festival. Just announced today. Got herself a nice little Robert Feeder column. Congratulations.
Yeah, great.
And, you know, this is great for the festival, and you bring, like I said, a respected, highly respected arts and culture acumen. Years at public radio here in town, both host and producer, doing a lot of arts. You're an arts reporter. You know, so let's make a transition from just talking about the festival and talk about arts and culture. It's interesting because, you know, I've had a hard time with this because I've had a lot of arts people on the show. I've had a lot of people where we're talking about things that I'm not necessarily comfortable with. I don't know much about the ballet. I don't know much about the lyric opera, but I am curious about. I'm curious about it, and I've always felt, you know, that curiosity and that lack of being intimidated by, because it's very intimidating. The entire process of following the formal and traditional when it comes to the high arts is something that's just really hard to dig into if you really don't know it, and I don't know it, but I also have the good fortune of being blind to the fact that, you know, I am ignorant.
No,
I'm good at being like, I'm okay. Oh, but I mean, I guess the question I have is like, I'll always feel like people don't necessarily want to talk about arts or culture or have the discourse about it because there's no entry point. That it's a pretentious conversation, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, when it's like established, it's kind of like we were talking about like established religion, you know, and like people are kind of, lots of people are leaving that kind of religious practice and branching out on their own. And I think it is because you walk in and there's a set of rules, and if you don't know the rules, you feel a little like out, how does this work? And am I going to make a mistake and make a fool of myself? And I think sometimes in the arts, it can feel like that, right? Like if you're going into a museum or going to the opera, like, it seems like everybody else knows what they're doing. Like, I remember the first time I went to the Lyric and it was beautiful. I mean, I was sort of just, you know, getting excited about the way everything looked and wearing a fancy dress, which had nothing to do with the art, you know, it's just a spectacle.
Yeah, right.
But that's
part of it.
That's a big part of it. And like when I love it, like at a program, mine or someone else's or ours or someone else's, where that buzz of people all being together, you know, where they're really excited about something happening. So I feel like you know, you could probably do, and I think museums have done an amazing job of this, of like really trying to think about how to not be an intimidating place and like invite people in, and you have more activities going on.
Right. To not be exclusive. And,
right.
And
that
sort
of. It's precious. Yeah. I mean,
right.
yeah, it's a
right.
masterpiece, and maybe, you know, Sotheby's could get $1 gazillion for it, but it's also just something someone made at some point.
Right.
There's all these different ways to think about it. And so, you know, I think that it's important to try and find a way to make what you're doing feel welcoming to everybody. Like, there's a great woman at the Field Museum. I don't know if you've ever had her on, Ala Kawali. She's an anthropologist, but she did this study of culture in Chicago, right? And she interpreted in the broadest possible way and what culture really is, which is, you know, there could be a group of people gathering and singing in a church basement. It could be people having like a book club. So she didn't think of it as like, you know, how many cultural organizations are and what are their budgets and how many, you know, programs do they do a year? She just thought, what are people actually doing in their communities, and tried to like get a handle on that. And it's like a really fantastic approach. And that's, I think, how we need to think about art and culture.
Yeah.
We were over at IDEO today. I was doing this workshop with these PhDs, and you know, that whole design thinking thing where you have to draw and you draw ideas and you do it really fast. And they were saying, you know, everyone gets really, us adults, we're like, oh, I can't draw, or someone's going to make fun of my drawing. And they're like, kids never do that. They just think, this is great. I get to draw, like, you know, I'm just going to go to town. They don't think that way. So I don't know. It would be nice to think that this is part of daily life and something we all participate in, and we may not call ourselves artists, but we all have that in us. So
there's a great line, and I've heard it a couple of times, this idea that we're all artists till someone tells us we're not.
Right.
You know, I mean,
there's
that's society. We're all artists until someone says you can't do this.
Or until someone cuts the budget, because that is the one thing.
Well, that's the same concept, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it seems to me, as we try to drill down into what makes arts and culture tick, I mean, or how important it is, it seems the things I pull away from this convo is emotion. Obviously, the way that it makes us feel.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is this part of community, which is togetherness. And you even mentioned right at the top of the one thing about the Humanities Festival that works is that people love to be in the same room with each other.
Yeah.
Whether that could be at one of the events, watching an author talk about stuff, as you mentioned, or they're, like you just said, the church basement where people are getting together to sing. So emotion and togetherness seem to be a big sort of through lines when we talk about why culture is important.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that connectedness and expression. I mean, you know, we don't always get that license to express ourselves in different ways. And I think people are like starved for that. And they're starved for ideas. They want to actually think about serious things. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with, I don't think that because a work of art or a piece of music is complicated or it's in a different language or anything like that means that it's not something that people would connect to. I mean, when you hear a great soprano singing, I mean, it's just, you know, it does.
Yeah.
Why does music make us feel emotional, whether it's like pop music or hip hop or opera? I don't know what that is, but it definitely stirs something.
Yeah. I always wonder if the disconnect between people, and I get this a lot, but this concept that arts and culture isn't for everybody. That, you know, some people, you know what, I don't want to talk about that. Mm-hmm. You know, it comes from the fact that at a certain point, it's devalued. That because of cutting arts programs in schools or changing the way that we value it in our education, at some point or another, it became an extracurricular activity.
Right.
And you chose sports instead.
It's like your side gig, right?
Right.
Like, it's not your main gig. Why can't it be? Like, I mean, the whole notion of progress or, you know, is that we would be liberated from work. And if we're not working, what could we do? Like, it seems like artistic production would be one of those big things. But that hasn't happened. And part of it is about cutting budgets. Like, you know, we prioritize other things, or, you know, we don't think it's worth investment. And yet I think everyone feels it's like when you think about your kids, of course you think that's part of what their education should include. You would never imagine that, you know, a child could go through school and not learn about music, right? Or how to draw. It just seems unthinkable.
Yeah.
And yet that kind of obviousness doesn't translate into a really strong commitment. And I mean, there's obviously a lot of people in this state and city who are super committed to the arts and culture. Like,
yeah,
the government and private citizens who put a lot of money into it. I'm not saying they don't, but it has that weird kind of, I think it is because it's, people think it's a sort of a privilege thing. It has that weird status.
I think of, as a good point about government, I think that there has been more priority put on arts and culture from leaders. And I think, of, especially in the city, mm-hmm. and I wouldn't necessarily say, I don't think of it necessarily down in state government, but I mean, at the leader, I think Mayor Emanuel goes out of his way to point out arts and culture. And I think that DCAS here, the Department of Cultural Affairs, especially with new leadership, seems to want to prioritize this, mm-hmm. to say this is not something that, again, is extracurricular. We want this to be part of the fabric. I mean, to hear Mark Kelly talk about right. it, he says, I want Chicago to be known as an arts and culture city.
And it is. I mean, there was no other, when DK started and it was doing all that programming, which is all free, there was no other city in North America. I mean, I think people have caught, like Toronto is doing that. New York just came up with its own cultural plan, which is hard to imagine. Like New York City needs a cultural plan, but they do because they're trying to figure out how to keep it alive. And because it does drive the city, it's not just the economic benefits, like that was like that big argument for arts. Well, you know, it's a great economic development right. tool. And fine, that's great. But it also is about that emotion and connectedness we were talking about. Like when you see, I was at a friend's and we could see down on Millennium Park the other night. The CSO was there, I think. And like the lawn was like totally packed, right? It's free. Everyone comes out. I mean, that is something that city loves and we should have that throughout the city, you know?
You know, you've covered, you know, as your job as artistic director, you've been out of it for a while, but you did for years cover arts and culture in this town. Is it an equal prospect, the idea of arts and culture? I mean, as the city says they want to be an arts and culture city, is arts and culture getting into different neighborhoods, low-income neighborhoods, places where it might be needed more than other places?
No. I mean, I think it is there. I mean, it is there on that kind of everyday level. There are artists in every community, musicians, people who gather and create stuff together, right? It's all over the city. But in terms of like funding and all of that and just access, I don't think it is. And so like for us, that's been a big priority for me, like trying to take the festival into neighborhoods. And I think it's not just us or other organizations in the city doing it. But so we're going to be in Bronzeville again this fall. We were there last year. We're going to South Shore Cultural Center. You know, we try to think, well, where could we bring the kind of programming we're doing and who are the people? We couldn't go into those neighborhoods unless there already were cultural organizations there that we could work with, right? So I think that kind of networking is not like, oh, we're going to come save the neighborhood and bring culture. It's like, we're going to go and partner with people who are doing this where there's a kind of natural connection between what they're doing, what we're doing, and it makes sense to band together.
It's an interesting thought. I mean, you're an itinerant company, so you don't have a permanent space. But I think about, you know, the museums and some of the cultural institutions that are located in Chicago, whether it be downtown or some of the neighborhoods. But this idea that they're there for Chicagoans, you do have to put some time into getting to them. You go to the Art Institute or MCA or the History Museum or whatever it might be. But they're there. You just have to, you know, and the park districts have gotten into busing camps to these different places. Mm-hmm. But changing that up and going to the neighborhoods, there's a part of me that says that's amazing and I think that's great. And you've seen a lot of institutions try to do that. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I wonder how much of, you know, the idea that should those programs in a lot of times they're free to come to Millennium Park or what have you. It's a little bit of personal responsibility for people from the neighborhood to say, this is a shared experience. Come here together. Come out of your comfort zone. Come be a part of, to be together with other people from the city that you may not always be.
Yeah. Well, it's all our shared responsibility.
Like Taste of Chicago. That's the idea of Taste of Chicago. Anyway.
Right. Yeah. But it's not like there are people in certain neighborhoods that aren't going to it and other people who are, right? We're all like kind of spending way more time on our screens than we are going out into, you know, it's a commitment. It's a time commitment. You've got to get your kids there. You know, there's a lot involved in doing that. And so I think you need both things. But I think all of us, like ultimately, yes, that's the commitment we have to make. You have to show up and say this is important and show up for all of it, right. You know. of course you're going to show up to the CSO. It's like amazing. But there's a lot of other things probably happening in your neighborhood that you could also show up to.
Yeah.
And I say that for myself.
All right. So here's what we got. We got emotion.
Right. Yes.
Togetherness. There was a third one you put in that was awesome. I forgot it already. And then the fourth is show up.
Show up. Just show up. Isn't that what they say? Showing up is half the battle. That's how I got through school. I'd like tell myself every day, just go.
Just
it won't be
up.
As bad as you think it will be. It's still my philosophy of life.
I was going to say, I was half expecting that quote in Feeder today. Allison said, hey, I just keep showing up.
I just keep showing up and they got to do something with me. You know, what are they going to do with me?
You're on programming for the Humanities Festival. What do you have coming up here?
Okay.
July is a big month. Usually not, but it is.
It's not normally, but we, so like I said, we do this big workshop for PhDs, humanities PhDs from all over the country are in Chicago right now. We are putting them, it's like a boot camp for them to help them think about, like, they are highly skilled.
Where do you take them?
Highly educated. I took them to the DuSable Museum and to Stony Island Arts Bank.
Nice.
You know, Edmar, the unofficial mayor of Bridgeport, Ed Marzuski.
Lumpen Radio, yeah.
Lumpen Radio, he's going to give us a tour of the empire he's built there. We're going to go to his brewery. Where else are we going? We're going to IIT, to the Institute of Design to do some stuff. We were at IDEO today. So we like take them.
That's
really
great.
Hard for them because, you know, normally they're on their own and they don't have like a regulated schedule. And like it's every day, 8 to 5 p.m. You will enjoy Chicago, you Princeton PhD.
You will enjoy the humanities.
You will enjoy the humanities. You will know. But so on next Saturday, the 29th, we're doing the summit I was talking about on speech. So we're talking about speech on campus, speech in the arts, and speech just generally. David Cole from the ACLU, probably like one of the smartest people in the world, is going to be there with Anne-Marie Slaughter, who started the New America Foundation. Robert Zimmer, the president of the University of Chicago, who's, you know, been somewhat controversial on their approach to speech on campus. He's going to kick it off. Academic, you know, did you hear about Middlebury College, where they brought Charles Murray, the guy who wrote The Bell Curve, and students actually physically attacked him and this professor who brought or was involved in the event.
Wow.
And so she's coming to talk. And she has a very actually interesting take on this. It's not like it's very nuanced.
I love it. I mean, the last person we had on from the Humanities Festival was Laura Kipnis, who came through with her book and she was doing something with you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys get great guests there. And then in this fall, you still have the big festival this fall, right?
The fall festival kicks off October 28th. The theme is belief in the sense of faith and belief in the sense of trust. Who do you trust? Who do you believe in? And we have like 90 programs. We've already released a few. Al Gore is coming with the sequel to An Inconvenient Truth. He's back.
That's great.
With a book, and also a film.
Yeah, that comes out soon.
That comes out soon. Reza Aslan, you know, his new book is just God, called God. He just got kicked off CNN, which is, you know, again, that polarizing debate we were talking about. You have to be really careful how you enter the fray.
That's it. All right.
My friends.
Allison Cuddy, congratulations.
Thank you,
the
Justin.
New artistic director at the Chicago Humanities Festival. You can find it out at chicagohumanitiesfestival.org. Is that what it
is? That's the website.
You can find out all the programming they do year-round. Allison, thanks for coming in and setting us straight on arts and culture. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Justin. Great to see you.